Hey, this is Russell, and I work at the video store, the place that we can go to every week when it's movie night. On days like today, when the store is quiet, I get to chat to my friends about the films and the series that we're loving. All right, let's do it. Let's open up the shop.
Did you see that thing yesterday on the TV?
How's it, guys?
Good morning, Russell.
Hello.
How you guys doing?
Good and yourself?
Good, good.
I'm lekker, man.
Nice.
I'm very good. Welcome to the video store. Thank you for wandering in to our lovely video store. It's a little quiet now.
Yes.
Yes.
So this is a chance for the three of us to have a little chat and to catch up about all the movies and the series that we've watched this last week. We have ourselves a G-Force.
Hello.
Who is an editor.
That's right.
And also very much the producer of this show.
Mm-hmm.
His name is Graham.
Hi.
That's not G-Force on his birth certificate.
We've got ourselves a Perrin.
Hello.
A P-Dog.
Yep.
A P-Dog in the morning.
Yeah, we're going with that, I remember.
We have to sort of build on that.
Yeah.
Perrin, you a writer, you're a videographer, director, editor.
Yeah,
you're
I do a bit of everything these days.
A little bit of everything.
Yeah.
And myself, I am Russell, and I am the owner of The Bioscope, which is an independent cinema here in Johannesburg. So that'll explain why I talk a lot about The Bioscope.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, this is the week before the marriage.
Nice.
The big, the big marriage.
Congrats.
It's coming up this weekend.
Yeah.
Sadly, I can't see you there, Graham. Cole's away, but Gaddy will be there, and Perrin is going to show up. To the wedding, which is great. I'll have some of my movie nerds there.
Yes.
But yeah, because of that and the honeymoon, which will happen shortly thereafter, we're going to take ourselves a break next week.
Cool.
But just know that we love you and that the video store is going nowhere. It's just closed for a week.
Yes.
All right.
Yay. Cool.
But before we go anywhere, I want to make just a quick announcement for all those that are browsing the shelf.
Attention all customers, this is to let you know that the Horror Fest is here. It is going to be happening from the 30th of October to the 10th of November, but sadly only in Cape Town. It's going to be at the Labia. You can get your tickets at quicket.co.za or horrorfest.info. They've got lots going on, and it's a great festival that happens every year, and especially for all those who love film and love spooky season. It'll be taking place at the Labia Theatre, as I said, in Cape Town.
We've had ourselves for me it was quite a busy week last week. I went to three premieres, or three screenings, which I want to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
One of which I can't speak too much about because it was an exhibitor screening. So this is something that comes long before the press or the media screenings.
Mm.
And I got a chance to watch Gladiator 2.
Cool.
Very cool.
Which is the big our summer blockbuster, America's winter blockbuster.
Yes.
But that's coming out on the 15th of November in cinemas around the world. We got invited to Goodridge, which is the smaller, I don't want to call it an art house film, but it's a smaller drama comedy.
Okay. Cool.
Dramedy.
Michael Keaton, right?
Michael Keaton, that was the surprise hit for me of the week, and I want to get into that. Then myself and G-Force went on a mandate, and we watched the last Venom movie.
Yes.
The final of the trilogy.
I have a lot to say about that.
Oh, good. Yeah, no, it'll be good to chat about
that. I'm sweating already, geez.
Something we thought we could do, if Perrin is still up for it, is because we are in spooky season.
Yes.
And this is the week of Halloween. Perrin will always do his best to do a shift where he gives a list.
Yeah.
Perrin is a list guy.
Yeah.
Which is what I love. Many things I love about you. One of which is you make lists of movies.
Yeah.
And you were doing them long before you started working at the video store, which is why you got hired.
Yeah, for sure.
And so we're going to do a list of what, Perrin?
So it's horror movies you can watch in the final week of spooky season.
Okay.
But what we have available, what's available to pull off the shelf at the store, because sometimes all the classics are pulled out. So I'm going to give you a little stuff that you may have missed.
Okay.
Cool. So, yeah.
Lovely. Okay. Looking forward to that. And then we'll touch on some TV. Yeah. Just there's some good TV that is out there.
Maybe I'll recommend some spooky video games.
Ooh.
Because I love horror video games.
Yeah.
Let's have Graham be more the gaming guy.
Cool.
Yeah.
Because if you're old enough to have gone to video stores,
yes,
you're old enough to remember that you could rent
video games.
Video games, yeah, from the video.
Back when they came on discs.
Yeah, I remember when it was on the PS1, we would always rent Tekken 2.
Right.
And we would always race through the whole day to like unlock every character. And this is before we realized, oh, you just buy a memory card,
yes,
and you can save your progress. Yeah. So every time we buy it again, it was like playing the Lion King game where you'd have to start from scratch every time you die.
Was it a good way to like test a game? Because I'm sure at some point, if you were constantly renting, I'm sure the guy at the video store was like, dude, don't you want to just buy the game?
Buy it already.
Yeah.
Okay, so it was a nice way to like trial again.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I know with a lot of those old classic games, like so the notoriously hard games, like the Lion Kings, the Aladdins, all those, they apparently developers purposely made them so difficult that every time you die, so there would be no save mode. So every time you die, you would start from the very beginning.
I remember that I had a Game Boy, and I remember Lion King on Game Boy was very frustrating.
Yeah. So like that was apparently a marketing ploy for kids when they wanted to rent games. They would just keep on renting it, or they would just buy it eventually.
That even goes back to like arcade days when they made games incredibly hard on arcade.
Exactly.
So
you
have to continue 30 seconds. Keep putting coins in.
Yeah, 100%.
The house always wins.
Right?
Yeah, 100%. Bastards. Fucking nerds.
But let's do a little catch up.
Yes.
Let's do a little round of Hey Did You Guys See, just to talk about some of the latest little news of the last week.
Let's do that.
Who wants to kick it off?
I can start. Hey, did you guys see? I actually wanted to talk about this last week, but I forgot. The trailer for Dune Prophecy.
Oh, yeah. It looks great, man.
Dune of Thrones.
Oh, yeah.
Is that something? Is that anything?
That could be something.
Yeah.
That's quite witty.
Nah,
well done.
Call HBO right now.
Rename it.
Yeah.
This is Dune,
yes,
the famous book
series,
most recently done into two films.
Yeah.
But this is the TV show.
Yeah.
It's a prequel.
That's it. Yeah, like I think like thousands of years.
Yeah.
I think it's about the like origins of the Bene Gesserit.
Okay, yeah.
Gee, so it goes back, eh?
Yeah.
So this has got nothing to do with Paul Atreides.
No, none of the same characters. It's way, way, way before that.
Yeah, I think that's good because they had to kind of not compare themselves to Villeneuve's like latest films.
Yeah, exactly.
I wonder how close to, because I know in Dune, correct me if I'm wrong, but like the reason why they don't use computers and stuff is because they had a war with AI.
Yes, there was like an AI war.
Yeah,
and AI
so
was outlawed.
I wonder how close it is to that, because I know the Bene Gesserit came after that.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's an interesting question.
Yeah, I think a lot of the Dune world building was very complicated. And when you read the book, like the first one, like Dune, they don't really hold your hand through it.
No.
And there's a couple of parts of it, things like that, as you said. This is a world so far in the future that they don't use computers.
Yeah.
And they rely on the
spice.
You know, we're now going to build the whole world of Dune. But they rely on this spice, which is only available on this planet, because that spice gives them the mental cognitive ability to navigate space.
Yes.
So all of a sudden it becomes the most valuable thing.
Yeah.
But the Bene Gesserit were these like witches in a way of that sort of galaxy, of this world. But they are a little bit Illuminati at the same time.
Yes.
So they've been,
they've been planning
who marries who and who gives birth to who. And
directing genetic lines to kind of try and create control.
And what did you think of the trailer?
I think it looks pretty good.
I
like the cast.
Great. Yeah,
Emily Mortimer. Mark Strong is in it. I didn't even know that. I love Mark Strong.
Whoa. I didn't know that.
Mark Strong?
He's a British actor.
Bald guy.
Bald dude. He's in the Kingsman movies.
Oh, yeah, that guy.
Yeah, he's Carmine Falcone now in
Oh, England. Yes, he's in the show.
He replaced John Turturro.
John Turturro,
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
But yeah, it looks good.
It looks really good, yeah.
Hey, did you guys see? We have apparently a bit more information on Christopher Nolan's next film.
Yes.
It is rumored, emphasis on rumored, to be a 1920s period horror about vampires.
What?
with Matt Damon and Tom Holland.
Yes, that,
expected to star.
That I had heard. I had not heard the vampire thing. I heard was like a espionage spy movie thing.
Just with vampires.
Maybe.
Actually, that would be pretty cool. That'd be very cool.
James Bond with vampires. I'd watch that.
So the only reason why I'm like kind of about that idea is because Robert Eggers is doing Nosferatu now.
Yes.
So I don't need, I mean, I don't need an overflow of 1900s vampire movies. But
two will hopefully be enough room in your brain.
Yeah, yeah, but I mean, I think...
also, that would be very different coming from those two guys.
Yeah, so that'd be cool because then we get to see Nolan tackle a new genre, which will be very cool.
Because he has kind of done the 1920s, that sort of more period stuff with The Prestige, right?
Yeah, that was 1800s.
Like late 1800s.
But I mean, it's that world, right?
Yes. Yeah.
I feel like decade after decade, and at that time, we're kind of a little bit similar.
Yeah, and his genre...
Things sped up when, like, the computer arrived.
Yeah, his genre is as action thrillers, and I mean, most recently, like, a biographical drama. Yeah. So horror would be very, very interesting, and it'd be interesting to see if he can actually pull it off, because he might not be good at it.
Yeah,
Sci-fi, obviously, he does a lot of.
It's also, it has been made with Universal, same as...
Yeah, apparently Warner Bros. Threw money at him, back.
Apparently wrote him quite a big check, which was money he was already owed for Tenet.
Yeah.
They were like, here's the money we owe you, maybe you should come back, and he was like, thank you, I'll take that. So Universal, let's make a movie.
Well, I mean,
because he has always been a Warner Brothers.
Yeah, because of Tenet, because they put it on streaming day one.
Yeah,
he was like,
I was about to say, why did they owe him lots of money?
I think it was just like residuals and there's always these additional things based on like box office and that sort of thing.
But like Villeneuve had the same issues with Dune.
Yeah,
like he was really upset that I remember it was cinema, theatrical release and streaming on the same day.
Yeah.
And that affected its outcome. I mean, obviously, I don't blame Warner Brothers for thinking this is the best way to do it because of COVID.
Yeah.
This is the first June when it
came out. It was during the pandemic. But
I think there was a problem with it, especially with Legendary was the studio behind Dune. They also do the Godzilla King Kong movies.
Yeah.
And they put a bunch of those straight to streaming. But without even like consulting Legendary about it at all. They're like, we're the distributors, we're just putting it on streaming. It'll completely fuck the box office. We don't care.
And it's the filmmakers that they would, especially Villeneuve and Nolan, who are all about the cinematic experience. So when you tell them, it's only going to streaming, of course they're going to be like, no, what the hell?
Yes.
Like,
I didn't make this movie for that.
Yeah, you know, so yeah.
Interesting.
And also, something else is right now, that Chris Nolan's movie and Spider-Man 4 are both set for the same date.
Yes, in 2025.
So one of them is going to have to move, because I think the studios will probably stick with Nolan, especially for the IMAX screens.
Well, especially if they both have the same fucking actor in them.
Yeah, the same lead.
Well, Tom Holland.
That's one thing that I'm excited. I'm like actually happy for Tom Holland, because the problem with being hooked by the MCU world, especially when it was in its height, is that a lot of those actors struggle to break away from that.
Sure.
Even if they're established. Like Robert Downey Jr. was only doing Iron Man.
Yeah.
So like when he
was being kept busy. Like just literally kept busy.
So that's why when he did Oppenheimer, and it was such a, like, it was a great, like, it was a genuinely Oscar-worthy performance, because he was finally playing a role that was different to what he's been accustomed to now for the past, 15 years?
Yeah. No, it's a little bit like being in a TV show. It's like you get very stuck in a character.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. So, like, it was nice to see him return to, because Robert Downey Jr. before Iron Man was an accomplished actor, like, respected.
Yeah,
sure.
He was fucking awesome. I mean,
But do you guys know the actor Tom Hollander?
No.
British actor.
That name. Yeah.
This dude.
Yes, yeah.
So he has the same representation as Tom Holland.
He made a mistake.
They did once. He once got this notification. He had this like massive amount of money put into his account, and he was like,
God,
"That's all right." They accidentally sent him
the Spider-Man money.
one of Tom Holland's like bonus checks for the box office of Avengers, and he was like, "This one bonus was more money than I've made in my entire life."
That's
crazy. It was like millions of dollars.
Jesus.
Oh my God. Just imagine the sting of having to give that back.
Sorry.
Either that or it's like, I'm sorry, just, this isn't Tom Hollander.
or just knowing this like 24-year-old kid.
Speaking English. Just a donk, just put down the phone.
Knowing that this 24-year-old kid is making more money on bonus checks than you're making your entire life. It's got to be.
No, it's silly money. But
yeah, but good for him, man. Yeah. Like, he's a good dude as well, what I like.
He seems like a nice guy.
Yeah, so it's nice. Hey, did you guys see that Blade has been pulled from Disney's release schedule? So that likely means it's dead in the water.
Probably is.
If they use the word indefinitely, then it's emphasis on definitely.
Well, I mean, they've gone through how many directors now? I think like
at least three.
Yeah, they've all pulled out from what I gather, creative differences.
Yes.
And I don't know if that stems from the script or from the just studio execs.
But what, just to paint the picture for folks, what was this going to be?
So Mahershala Ali was going to be Blade, right?
Yeah.
He was the lead. I think Natasha Lyonne was attached to Star. Mia Goth was going to be in it as well.
Okay.
This is to reboot Blade, which is the famous comic book.
Yeah, to integrate it into current MCU, right?
Yeah.
But
because that all came before the Iron Mans and the Thors. That was the
officially considered the first Marvel MCU.
And
it's the first R-rated Marvel movie.
Yes,
and it starred Wesley Snipes, and it actually did pretty well at the time.
It became a cult hit as well. So, apparently Mahershala Ali was never happy with the screenplay. So either with Mahershala Ali, though, he is also, like Robert Downey Jr., a respected actor. Yeah. Like, he's a two-time Oscar winner. Yeah. You know, he is a proper actor. He's a thespian. So, like, I think the screenplays are probably dog shit.
Let it die,
I think.
And then you can rebuild it from, like, take expectations to zero.
Yeah.
So that they can only be built up from here.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think it's almost like it's a good foreshadowing was in Deadpool 2 when, spoilers.
Yeah.
Sorry, skip. Wesley Snipes, when he pops up as Blade, he even says, he's like, and I'll be the only one, or something like that.
I mean,
and
that was in Deadpool and Wolverine.
Deadpool and Wolverine. And he was like, and I will be the only one. And the audience was like, ooh, damn. So, like, I think it's almost like foreshadowing that he was like, I don't fucking touch this.
Maybe someone behind the scenes is really fighting to make Blade British. Because he's British in the comic books.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, jeez.
He's British. Him, they've done that a few times. Constantine as well, the character that Keanu Reeves played, is British.
Oh, so he's not, whoa.
Yeah.
Dude.
The character is actually based on Sting.
Yeah, I know that. Yeah. Oh, that's
more,
that makes sense.
More, he's more, oh, golly.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, I would have loved to have seen Keanu Reeves do his Victorian Dracula accent for Constantine. Hello, governor.
I need to still watch that. Oh. Hey? Do you know that that's one of my big, like, I can't believe you haven't seen.
Oh, really?
I haven't seen Bram Stoker's Coppola's Dracula.
Yeah,
it's very messy. Dracula.
Where Keanu Reeves very famously has a dog shit.
Yes.
It's a
movie of bad accents.
It's probably
the worst of a bad bunch.
I think it might be one of the worst movie accents I've ever heard. Like, it's so bad and, like, it's just awful. It's not the worst casting I've ever seen. The worst casting of all time is John Wayne playing Genghis fucking Khan.
Oh, wow.
What? Hey there, Pilgrim. Yeah, he's Genghis fucking Khan.
What was the movie?
I can't remember the name. It was called The Conqueror or something. Yeah. It was from the 50s, and it's just awful. Yeah. It's one of those, like, so bad. It's like an anomaly. You have to, like, watch it because it's so bafflingly awful. Like, how did this...
They just pumped those movies out at some point.
Yeah.
Hey, did you guys see that Luca Guadagnino?
Yeah.
Is that how you pronounce his name?
Ciao. Yeah, it is. Luca Guadagnino. Yeah.
Guadagnino. Is set to direct a new adaptation of the book American Psycho.
I'm actually... What do you feel about that? Let's get your opinion.
I am also going to admit, I haven't watched the whole of the American Psycho
really?
Movie. There was a point in my life where I was like, this is a movie I need to watch.
Yeah.
And I started it. I think I watched it, but I was too young.
Yeah.
It was like to varsity. Get it, yeah. I don't even know whether I finished it. I need to watch American Psycho again.
Same.
I can't bring myself to read the book.
It's so fucking good. Yeah. So have
any of you guys read the book?
I've got the book. It's on my TBR to be read. It's on my bookshelf. I'm probably going to read it after what I'm reading right now.
Okay.
Apparently, the book's more fucked up.
Yeah.
I've also heard the book's a little bit of a slog.
Oh, really?
Like, there's long stretches where it's kind of like really boring routine nonsense, and then it's like punctuated by like moments of like
that actually
super violence.
But that makes sense because the movie, he talks about routine.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, like a lot. So. Mm. The movie, what I love about that movie, I mean, I need to read the book to actually compare it to the Christian Bale film.
Yeah.
But I think it's very cool that that movie was directed by a female.
I was literally just about to bring
that
up.
Affects,
if you hadn't brought that up in that one beat,
yeah.
I was going to chime in and go, it was directed by a woman.
Yeah. So, but American Psycho, the film, is one of my favorite movies of the 2000s. It's Christian Bale should have been nominated for an Oscar for it. It is one of the funniest movies of the 2000s as well.
Yeah.
Like I wouldn't say it's a straight horror. It's a satire. It is satire.
But,
it's horror comedy. It's so fucking
that's
good.
That's why I phrased it
it's
the way
it's very dark horror comedy.
That's why I phrased it the way I did, which was not that there's going to be a remake of the movie.
Yeah, it's a
it
new
like,
interpretation.
It's a new adaptation of the book.
Yeah.
So I think we're allowed to do that. We will always compare the adaptations.
Yeah, of course.
But maybe he will bring something new to it. He's got a queerness.
So
to him,
yeah,
right?
So he is gay.
He's a gay
filmmaker, right? So like that's one thing that I'm interested in seeing is that Luca Guadagnino very rarely misses. I haven't seen one bad movie by him. I think he's one of the great filmmakers working today. I think he's a very sensual filmmaker.
Sensual.
Yeah, like just his his Suspiria remake is better than the original in my opinion.
Yeah.
So I'm interested to see him. He's not scripting it, but one project that I'm really bummed that didn't go through is the Coen brothers were doing a remake of Scarface, and he was going to direct.
Oh.
They were going to write it, and he was going to direct. That would have been fucking
a
crazy.
Of Scarface.
Yeah, that'll be the third remake, yeah.
Interesting.
Second remake, too. Yeah.
Because, like, the famous Scarface is itself a remake.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Brian De Palma one, yeah. The first one is, I think, it was done in the 1930s.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like A Star is Born.
Yeah.
There's a whole tradition
four.
Of them. Yeah.
Yes.
Anyone else got one? I got one more last little one.
I've got a Whittle one.
Hey, did you guys see the trailer for Love Hurts?
No.
So this is a movie with Ki-hae Kwan.
Ki-hae Kwan.
A real estate agent / former hitman.
Oh, God.
Oh, cool.
Who's like brought back into being...
I hate the fucking hitman thing. Do you know what I mean? It's like glorifying this like weird job that kind of does and kind of doesn't exist.
Except for the movie Hitman. I fucking love
Hitman. Well, that was the best because they made fun of the joke that all these kind of movies involve assassins and hitmen.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, this is clearly very much a comedy, action comedy.
So sorry, say that again. He's a real estate agent?
Yes, who used to be a hitman. And now...
His previous life is coming back to haunt him.
It seems like he helped someone like fake their death basically and get out of it. And now they found out about this, the people who...
If he can play the sort of bumbling guy
I
that still has
Kwan.
Martial arts prowess,
exactly.
Which is what was so good about Everything Everywhere All at Once, then this will be a good movie.
Exactly.
I love Ki-hae Kwan. Yeah. He's just an absolute treasure. He's
listening
a lovely man.
To that bro's story is fucking astounding.
Yeah.
Like a podcast interview, if you can catch any podcast interview that delves into his life, bro was in like a concentration camp as a kid.
He's Vietnamese.
He spent years in like a... Basically a concentration camp.
Yeah, a refugee camp.
Like a refugee camp sort of separated from family and fuck, it's astounding.
Wow. It's just crazy that like... Cause
and then he was this huge Hollywood star.
A child star,
age.
Yeah.
And so then, it's like, what a whirlwind of a life.
Because people also forget that when he disappeared from after the success of Goonies and Indiana Jones and stuff like that, is that he was a stunt coordinator and a very successful one at that too.
Yeah.
So like, it's so... nice to see him coming back. And like one of my favorite stories is how him and Spielberg still keep in contact. Like, yes. Spielberg still sends him Christmas cards every year. And I think it's so sweet and heartwarming. Yes.
Yeah. And like, people were, when his story, when he kind of came back and he was like, well, the reason you haven't seen me is because I just wasn't getting jobs. Nobody would hire me. People were like, hey, Spielberg, why didn't you help this guy out?
Yeah.
And he was like, he did twice.
Yeah.
He gave me the roles in Indiana Jones and The Goonies. Yeah. Like, what more is he supposed to do?
Yeah, exactly.
At some point, it stops being his responsibility.
But it also it also becomes a case of, like, that's where one thing I also wonder, where, like, directors are working closely with one actor for a while. You know, like, you look at Paul Thomas Anderson with Daniel Day-Lewis or Joaquin Phoenix or whatever, and then they stop working with him. Is it a case of a lot of the times it's just a case of literally, like, this role doesn't suit you.
Yes.
No, of course.
It's not like I don't hate you. It's just...
Yeah.
I'll never forget...
It's like Scorsese with DiCaprio.
Yeah.
Like,
I'll never forget being in the school plays in high school, and this woman who did the plays each year was a lovely, dynamic woman who basically just gave up her time. I think she had a history or an involvement in theater in South Africa and said, my give back is I'm going to do Bryanston High's major production every year. But she said something once where she was like, I could act the pants off Pamela Anderson, but I'm not going to get cast in Baywatch. And I was like, I get it.
Yeah,
I get it, lady. It's like, you just might not be the fucking right person for the role. And I remember, like, I remember even just at 16 hearing that, going like, oh, I think I needed to hear that.
Yes.
Like, that's really important.
Yeah.
That no one should ever take it the wrong way, even with jobs.
Yeah.
If you're just not the right fit, you could be so qualified, but if you don't gel or connect, or you could just not be the right person.
Yeah.
Yeah, 100%.
Let's do our last few.
Sorry. So Mike Flanagan.
You got to say it.
Did you guys see? So Mike Flanagan, who is, you know, Netflix's, like, golden child at the moment, who did, you know, Haunting of on Hill House. Yeah.
So he's a director?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a writer-director. He did Dr. Sleep.
Fall of the House of Usher.
Yeah, Fall of the House of Usher, Dr. Yeah. Sleep. He's considered the new master of horror at the moment. Like, Stephen King.
Yeah, he's done, like, 3 or 4 horror series that have all been very well received.
Yeah, and Stephen King's
Midnight Mass.
Yeah, Stephen King is a big fan of him. Yeah. Huge. He is adapting Carrie into a miniseries for Amazon Prime.
Yes, I did hear this.
Which is interesting because Netflix, I was under the impression, I think maybe their contract's run out.
Yeah, maybe.
Because he's given them all the stuff they want. But Stephen King's very excited that he's doing an adaptation of Carrie.
That's cool.
Which will be very interesting.
Because it was a Stephen King book.
Yeah,
directed by the original... First adaptation was done by Brian De Palma. So that'd be very cool. I'm excited to see that because Mike Flanagan, I mean, I haven't been a huge fan of his last few outputs.
Does it make sense that it's a series?
Sometimes I don't know. I've never read
stories,
the book.
It makes sense as a, you know, we've got It, Stephen King's famous
what
novel.
Do you have?
We've got the novel in the gift shop of the Bioscope.
No, but what is it? Kira does that to me every time, and I'm like, shut up, I hate you, sorry.
And it is a fucking book.
It's a tome.
Yeah, it's a tome,
I think Stephen King's books tend to be quite dense. So,
so that makes sense. Take one look at that, and you're like, this has to at least be more than one movie, which of course it was.
Well, it's like when Stephen King made his own version of The Shining.
Oh, it was awful, apparently. I never watched it, did you?
No.
I heard it's not good.
Yeah.
But it is more faithful.
I've got a question for you, X. Someone once at the Bioscope, we were standing around the gift shop and I was telling them about the Bioscope and we've got books that are on sale. They are books that have either become films or books about films or just in the world of the Bioscope, we think you'd like it. This one bro picked up Gerald's Game and said, do you know the fact about this book? And I was like, no.
Yeah.
He said Stephen King didn't write it. He said it was at the point in Stephen King's career where they outsourced
ghostwriters
to write
that
books.
Makes sense.
Interesting.
And I was like, really? And I went home and Googled it, and of course no part of Google says this was part of that.
It's a theory.
Okay.
Is it just a suspicion? Did you hear anything like that?
So that makes sense though, because there was a point in Stephen King's career where he was like the hottest author on the planet, and he was churning out like 20 books like every 2 years. So it's either a lot of cocaine, because I know he did a lot of cocaine.
He was flying in the 80s.
Yeah, and a lot of it was terrible. So I wouldn't be surprised if they did try outsource stuff. Yeah. But I mean,
like, but I mean, imagine being the person that pumped that out.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, it's like sort of the early version of AI, right? Because this person's got to write it in his style.
Yeah. Yeah.
But imagine it doing well in like some completely unknown person who just can't say that they did it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was like, well, that was me.
Did you watch the Netflix?
That seems like a conspiracy theory. Yeah.
Did you watch the Netflix Gerald's Game?
No, I've heard it's pretty good.
It's bloody good.
The movie.
It's really good. Yeah.
I've seen the movie, yeah.
Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah, I know. It's quite something.
Cool. Yeah, it's fucked up.
Okay, I got one last one.
Cool.
Which is, hey, did you guys see Kevin Bacon discovered that his wife is his cousin?
Oh.
But here's the thing.
Yes. How many times removed?
Exactly. So it is such clickbait bullshit.
Okay.
He found out that his wife is somewhat related to him. She is his 9th cousin once removed.
Okay.
Whatever the fuck that is.
But yeah,
I just love the idea of Kevin Bacon discovering that his wife is his cousin. And of course, that just hooks everyone.
Yes.
But I thought I would just mention, take this as a chance to mention something.
Yeah.
Do you guys know about Bacon numbers?
Six degrees. Yeah,
from Kevin Bacon.
I know that as well.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So for folks that don't know, it's a little Easter egg of Google. It was one of Google's like early little games that they created, which is for you to discover a famous person's Bacon number, their degrees of Kevin Bacon, which is such a lovely play on degrees of separation, which is basically they've obviously tabulated and coded all the people who have acted in the movies alongside Kevin Bacon.
Yeah.
And what movies they are linked to, I guess it's all mining kind of IMDb information.
Yes.
So you could basically put in any actor's name followed by Bacon number, and you can see their Bacon number, which is how many films they are away from Kevin Bacon.
Yeah.
So it's a lovely little thing. Yeah. I just thought that this is a great opportunity to bring it up if someone hasn't.
I just wonder who decided, hey, we should figure that out.
Yeah.
Let's program it into Google. You know?
All right. Okay, let's get on to movies.
Yes.
Okay. Let's start.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go in order of what I watched last
week.
Yeah,
let's do that.
Let's just start with some careful treading around Gladiator 2.
Yeah.
We are going to keep the discussion around what we know from the trailer and what we can see in the trailer and talk about a few things. I don't want to give too much away. And also, I don't think nobody ever said something, but I think it was pretty much a spoken rule that me as the exhibitor shouldn't go out and pretend to be a member of the press and talk about Gladiator 2.
Okay, yeah, got you. So let's just talk about the trailer, basically.
Well, yeah, sure. What I can say is like, it's fucking epic.
Mm.
Yeah.
It's huge. It's just like the
scale.
First one.
Yeah.
We know we've got Paul Mescal, who is now the sort of new Russell Crowe in a sense.
Yeah.
And he seems to follow a very similar trajectory, which is upon captured, becomes a gladiator and has to sort of fight his way through life as a gladiator. So it's a very similar movie.
Is it vengeance themed again?
Yeah. Okay. And so I perhaps want to put a little sort of question out there, which is like, why did we need to make this movie if you are going to tell a very similar story? So I'm just going to put that out there to say that's my one.
You.
That's my one sort of overarching question, having watched it.
Yeah.
But I will say it is fucking huge and fucking epic
mm.
and certainly deserves your attention. I'm not sure what else we can say.
Yeah.
What are your guys' sort of feelings on it? My one other comment to make is like, I think personally calling it Gladiator 2 is stupid. And I think we're at that point now where perhaps unless you're a Despicable Me or a Kung Fu Panda, where you're so obviously sort of playing in a very simple sandbox.
Yeah, a 2 movie,
calling it Gladiator 2 points to the fact that it's a sequel too much for me. Like, it should be
Gladiator, this. Yeah,
the
I get you.
Gladiator or the something of something.
Yes.
Or just like a whole new name that just has Gladiator in it.
I mean, I wonder how much of that is just marketing.
Yeah.
Like people want to make, like, the marketing department wants to make sure people connect this to a movie that they know and is well known and people really like. You know, won a bunch of
Oscars.
That's
a good point. And so this is the easiest way to
cash
pin
grab.
It to that.
Yeah, given that it's so far separated from the original, which came out in, 2000?
Yeah, 2000.
It's more than 20
yeah.
years old now.
Yeah.
They want to make sure people like mentally connect these two
so
movies.
It's yeah. interesting because, I mean, with Gladiator, Russell Crowe dies in it, right?
Yeah.
So, like, I know Russell Crowe mentioned recently that he was not approached at all about it, which makes sense because yes. what would you give this film? You know
yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah, it could be some flashback scenes. But of course, he just doesn't look the same.
No, he
yeah.
doesn't
oh,
at
no,
all.
He's a completely
yeah.
different looking dude. Yeah. 20 years on a...
Yeah, but like
a bro like Russell Crowe. Yes.
The thing is, like, it's a great cast. It really is a good cast. But like with Ridley Scott, I mean, I know Graham, you really enjoyed Napoleon.
Yeah.
I did not. But with Ridley Scott, I mean, the last good movie he made, like really, like well received critically and financially, audiences as well, as The Martian, right?
Yeah.
Like,
see, I even forget he made Martian. He pumps movies out.
Yeah. So that's my problem, is that with Ridley Scott, when Napoleon came out and was getting slammed by critics and audiences, his whole thing was like, oh, well, Scorsese takes 4 years to make a movie. I make two. I've made like six since he made his last movie.
It's like, that's not a good excuse.
That's my problem with Ridley Scott, is the grumpier he's gotten, the dumber shit he says, like the dumber things he says. He blames young people for not going to his movies. Like, bro, just make better movies. Like, it's just Ridley Scott has made some of my favorite movies of all time. And he's made two of what could be considered in the top 3-5 most influential sci-fi movies ever made. You know what I mean?
Which are?
Blade Runner and Alien,
and
right?
Alien, yeah.
And phenomenal filmmaker when he's got it right. But at this point for me, Ridley Scott, and if he ever listens to this, he'll shit on my head and come for me personally. But with Ridley Scott, for me, at least with Martin Scorsese, he takes his time with his projects. They are labors of genuine love, and you can see it, right?
Yeah.
With Ridley Scott, he's become sort of like a man working in a factory. He just churns out shoes without any thought into it. It's just a job. He's just a workman now. There's no thought or love behind crafting those pieces. You know what I mean? That's what it feels like to me.
So yeah, it maybe feels a bit more sort of Andy Warhol, as opposed to, you know, someone really only making the painting that sort of is dying to be made inside.
It's just
sort of pop art when the other one's
I mean, he's a filmmaker that
vision.
Every time he makes something new, I have to go watch it because it's Ridley Scott. Like, it's like Tarantino, even though I haven't been a huge fan of his past few movies, like, I'm like, oh, it's Tarantino. I got to see if he's back in form for me, at least, personally.
I'm a little bit like that with Wes Anderson. And,
same, exact
and
same.
With
Asteroid City.
With Asteroid City, I was like, yeah, I don't know. He's just so far up his own ass.
He is so far
up his ass. I'm here for it.
Yeah.
But like, my God, we are up his ass.
But I've noticed a lot of those directors, you look at who their early collaborators were on their best works. They don't work with them anymore. Wes Anderson, some of his best works were co-written with Owen Wilson.
Interesting.
Rushmore, Royal Tenenbaums, Bottle Rocket,
yeah.
Steve Zissou. And then you look
interesting.
At...
Interesting, because a lot of it is about the Oros to water.
Exactly.
Yes.
And
exactly.
We all have a perfect level of Oros.
Yeah.
And if you take out a lot of that water... And you are just Oros. It's gross.
It's like Tarantino. Yeah, exactly. Tarantino's best works were with his former editor, who sadly passed away, and his co-writer. He had a co-writer that would always work with him.
And actually tell him no.
Yeah, that's the problem, is that he needs someone to say, he's just surrounded by yes men. Okay, I'll.
Yeah, no, but that's a good, this is what's interesting.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So I think let's move on.
Yeah, let's move on.
Because I don't want to say too much now.
Yes.
I think we'll talk a bit more about it when we're closer to release.
Yeah,
when
it actually comes out.
And when those kind of embargoes lift and one can speak about
I must also remember when we do that to talk about the bonkers sequel to Gladiator that Russell Crowe had like commissioned at one point.
Really?
He got a writer who's some Australian musician. He was like, write me a Gladiator sequel.
Was it Nick Cave?
And this guy wrote, I think it may have been
Nick Cave or
wrote
Warren
an
Ellis.
Insane version of like a sequel
Fuck
to Gladiator.
Yes, I'd love to watch a Nick Cave.
And I must remember to look
Gladiator.
Into it.
But obviously,
never. No, it was way too crazy to ever get made.
Interesting. The other movie we watched this last week is a movie called Goodridge, which I think. We know this now. There's a handful of movies that will just get a little lost in the cinema world.
Yeah.
It's very cool that the distributors invite us to these screenings so that we get a chance to see them. Because in all honesty, if we weren't on those lists, we might not have ever paid attention.
We might have missed it.
And we might have missed it. And then we know this in the history of cinema that, you know, some movies just aren't built for cinemas, don't necessarily create buzz then. But then when they land in the video store shelves and then later on TV, which now, of course, is like streaming, that they then become these hits because they're just the right movie for the right appetite and right place.
Yeah,
got you.
So look out for this poster. It's quite a distinct poster of Michael Keaton. Now being Michael Keaton in his sort of 60s, 70s, and he's sort of submerged by water. So what I want to talk about for this is talk about some aspects of the movie which I think are admirable, and I think you guys would appreciate this. And I can set it up because it's clear from the trailer, but I thought you guys would appreciate, as this movie starts, you are fucking put straight in. And so this is a lesson for any writer.
Yeah.
Any screenwriter to not waste any time in setting up your movie. And I think it's a masterclass in that. This movie starts with a phone call in the middle of the night where Michael Keaton picks up the phone, expecting it's his wife. Right. He's expecting her to be home. He says, "Where are you? It's late. What's happening?" And she says, "I'm in rehab."
Cool.
And he goes, "What? Like what? Like
why?
What?"
Yeah. Yes.
She's like, "I'm in this facility. You can't talk to me." And he's like, then you realize, this is like minute two.
Yeah.
He didn't even believe she had a problem.
Right.
He's like, what? Like, this makes no sense. He's like, you drink a little, but I mean, I wouldn't have even said you have a problem. She's like, it's not drinking. And he's like, what the fuck? Like,
yeah.
And then you discover that there's been some use of like pills.
Right.
Not that she's crazy and fucked, but she's taken enough pills that she feels out of balance. She's like, I take something to wake up. I take something to fall asleep. She's obviously not like happy with her life. She's found herself, she's built up, compounded too much, and she's now in this facility.
Right.
Great.
Nice.
This is in this dark, in this sort of bedside table. And then the movie is about him in these 90 days while his wife is in rehab. Okay. His name is, someone Goodridge. We discover he is a somewhat established guy in LA. He owns the Goodridge Gallery. And he's lived a life of busyness, chaos.
Yeah.
Well, not chaos, but he spends most of his nights at events, networking, doing things. He's got two kids who are young enough to be quite fragile. So they're 9.
Yeah.
They're these two twins that he's got to look after. And you realize very quickly, much like he missed his wife's pull problem, that he hasn't been looking out. He hasn't played a part in raising these kids.
Right.
So he's got to learn basics like drop-off and lunchboxes and, their schedule. But he also has a daughter from a previous marriage who's now a very much a grown woman, played by Mila Kunis.
Okay.
And she is about to give birth. So he's about to become a grandfather. And so the questions of what kind of a father he was to her are also played because he tries to pull her in to help him. She's like, I got my own shit to deal with. I'm pregnant.
Yeah.
It's a lovely film.
Okay.
And it's well written. There's like a one or two moments that really shine because the man that Mila Kunis is married is the complete opposite of him.
Yeah.
A husband that's present, that's there, that's and Michael Keaton sees what a good husband should be in this guy. And that's why he perhaps doesn't sort of like him, but he comes to love
for
him.
Sure.
It's great. So I really think it's worth your time.
Cool.
It's a lovely character film. I think it's great for anyone in the world of writing to appreciate. And I wanted to bring up something. I don't know what to call it. I want to call it the gooey moment, which is when a film gets me in such a way that like my sort of insides go a little warm and gooey.
Yes. Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
There's like the little emotional flurry. People in the past have called that kind of butterflies.
I got you.
It's that feeling of like your insides sort of warm up.
Yeah.
And maybe I was in the wrong headspace, but like I didn't feel that as much as I wanted in Gladiator.
Okay.
Maybe that's why I don't want to say it's a bad movie, and I don't want to talk about that, but I was left a little bit cold.
Okay, I got you.
everyone could have their own and should go out Shoemaker and have their
theory.
Own experience.
Shoemaker theory. Yeah. Thank you. Sorry.
But in Goodridge, there were a couple of moments where the microwave got turned on and I was like a little bit gooey. So that, for me, personally, that is a good movie for me.
Okay, nice.
It's like, did I get some kind of gooey moment?
So I think at the video store you should have...
Russell's gooey
moment. Yeah, the sticker, like Oprah's Club.
Certified gooey.
Yes. Certified gooey.
You should do that. Oh my God. Okay, then the next movie we watched was Venom.
I just want to ask you a question quickly. Is Michael Keaton credited as Michael Keaton?
Yes.
Okay, because
he's changed his...
Yes, because his real name is Michael Douglas.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yes. But that's then because of like the guild rules and that sort of thing, you can't have two people with the same name.
Yeah.
So when he registered as Michael Keaton. But he said from now on he wanted to be credited as Michael Douglas Keaton.
Yeah, it's like
I wasn't sure if that was
like
the
thing.
Emma
yet. Stone wants to be credited as Emily Stone.
Yeah. Apparently it's almost like phoning Home Affairs. Like you're on this phone and then eventually like you when you're a young actor, you like get this one moment.
Yes.
Yeah.
Where you literally go, okay, name number one, and then they check and they go, no. And then
someone
you go,
that's taken, yeah.
Then you got to go, okay, cool, here's name number two. And then you got to kind of book it then and there.
Exactly.
Well, I know Michael Douglas's name isn't Michael Douglas. So
oh, really?
Yeah, it's like a Polish-Jewish surname. Yeah. Okay. Same as Charlie Sheen and Emilio Estevez. Their name is Estevez. Yeah, Ben Kingsley as well.
His real name is?
It's Indian, isn't it?
Yeah, it's Indian. It's something... Krishna something.
Yeah.
I can't remember. But it's completely like Indian name. His father's Indian.
I do like that these actors are now going, fuck it, call me by my actual name.
Exactly.
Like, that's awesome.
Yeah, that is interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, because there obviously was like a Samuel Jackson and he was like, okay, fuck. Okay, well, Samuel L. Jackson.
Yeah.
And they're like, cool, you can be that.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's like a sort of URL registry.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
Okay, so watched Venom.
Venom 3. Look at all these
Venoms. The Last Dance,
thank
you. So this is what I wanted to say.
Yes.
Stupid name.
Yeah.
Because I saw...
Stupid name, stupid movie.
No, because I saw a poster for it in the shopping malls.
Yes.
Where they had another, like, slogan.
Oh, okay.
And I was like, that's cool. And in my head, that was its
name. The title, yeah.
And then you realize that's not what it's called.
Yes,
it's called Venom the Last Dance. And the Last Dance has already been taken. In the last 2 years, that's been credited to the fucking awesome NBA miniseries on Netflix.
Yeah,
that was called The Last Dance.
Michael Jordan documentary.
Yeah, it was about the Chicago Bulls.
Yes. That dynasty,
And it all centers around their last season, which they called The Last Dance.
Right.
And it recently, in the last 2 years, that's what you associate the phrase The Last Dance.
Yeah.
I saw a poster that said Venom, something like "Till Death Do Us Part," and in my head that was the name of the movie, and
okay.
I was like, "That's a much better name because it's the whole movie." And we'll get into it now.
Yeah.
Centers around him being in this symbiosis with the Venom character, and that we know they kind of have to part.
Yes,
so that makes far more sense. It's like someone,
it's a buddy.
Someone
movie.
Should have pushed for that.
Yeah.
as the name of the movie. But anyways, we've had. These two movies so far, and now this is the third, that kind of make a trilogy of the Tom Hardy Venom films.
Otherwise known as the Garbage Trilogy. Sorry.
I really want to talk about the plot of this movie.
Okay. So, Graham, you
So
talk.
Early on, like, in fact, the way the movie opens, it's one of those movies that opens with just let's exposit at you.
Okay.
And you have the sort of villain on the movie who's not even in the movie.
A scientist telling you everything. Yeah,
kind of. But no, this is like a space monster.
You never quite see his face
called
throughout.
Called Knull. Knull, spelled with a K, voiced by Andy Serkis, who directed the last one.
Cool.
But he tells us that he this is the dude who created the symbiotes. And the symbiotes like rebelled and built a prison for him that he's trapped in. But if a symbiote... is attached to its host, and the host dies but comes back to life, it then creates a thing that acts as a key to open up the prison. And I'm just thinking, movie, what the fuck are you talking about?
This
makes no sense.
It makes no sense. Why would that be a thing?
Yeah.
So basically, it's like this kind
of...
So by virtue of this elaborate plot device, Tom Hardy now has this kind of GPS tracker within him.
Which only activates when they're like in Venom form.
Oh, it's too much.
And then the things that they're like monster things that this null guy controls.
It sounds like
can
a
see them.
It sounds like a cocaine idea.
But it's like
it's a Stephen King cocaine idea in the '80s.
But it's like this is someone going, I got it, I fucking got it.
The symbiotes like created this prison, but they built in this system where if one of them dies while connected to a host, it creates a thing that can open the prison. It makes absolutely
and somehow
no
they
sense.
All like that. Yeah, let's do
it
this.
Is such nonsense.
Everyone just like snaffs a line and goes, fucking brilliant.
But it literally like within the first 2 minutes of the movie, I was like, this makes no sense. You've lost me.
Okay, so I've got a question to you, which is in the previous two.
Yes.
Do we ever even leave Earth?
No.
Okay,
no.
So that's the thing. Is that so we've got this kind of punk rock first film where you've got a Tom Hardy in who's just a regular sort of dude that gets sort of linked to this kind of alien creature, right? Just let's just give some context. Somehow this alien creature fuses with him and becomes this kind of thing that lives inside him that can sort of almost sort of build itself on top of him to create venom.
Yeah. So in the comic books, to like explain this, the symbiote is brought back from space by a space shuttle crew.
Yeah.
I think the story is they have to like do an emergency landing in New York. That's like the story, and that's how it ends up being connected to Spider-Man.
Yeah. Mm.
And it's brought back by J. Jonah Jameson's son, who's an astronaut, who later becomes a space werewolf, but we don't need to talk about that. Yeah, awesome. So that's how it's sort of connected, and it's, again, traditionally connected to Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And Sony keeps doing this thing where they make their Spider-Man villains as heroes movies, and none of them work. All of them are bad, and no one likes any
Craven
of them.
Craven is going to be terrible.
Craven's coming out. They did Madame Web, which was apparently an absolute disaster. They did Morbius, which was also terrible.
Yeah, none of them work. Stop making villain movies.
People want to watch Spider-Man fight these characters.
Exactly. Thank you.
But is Venom meant to just be a full-on villain?
He's like an anti-hero.
He started as a villain and has sort of over time become...
It's like Harley
a little
Quinn.
Bit.
Like Harley Quinn started as a villain on the animated show, and then over time they made her like, oh, she's like this because the Joker is terrible to her, and she's actually not terrible, and carry on.
And Venom's had like a bunch of different hosts and that sort of thing. It's the same character. It is the same character in the comic books. I was trying to remember if they changed.
Wasn't
that or
the
not.
Bully in the comic books?
It was a guy who he
like
worked with. It was like
something.
A rival photographer.
Oh yes,
at the Daily, the not the Daily Planet. That's Superman.
Daily Bugle.
Daily Bugle. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
But it's a Spider-Man character, and they're just completely ignoring the connection to Spider-Man, which is stupid.
The one thing that I think is redeeming about this film is that the point of what they're trying to make endearing is the fact that there's this buddy film.
It's a buddy comedy between
the sort of eager, sort of somewhat evil but very powerful sort of person that sort of lives inside him, this kind of alien.
Yeah.
And him, who's this kind of guy.
Eddie Brock, that's his
Eddie
name.
Eddie Brock,
trying to remember his
and
name.
One thing is worth mentioning is that for a lot of these Venom movies, for continuity, as an actor for what probably was months, he would have to have been acting in these like sweaty,
dirty
clothes.
Yeah.
Which people don't think, you know, because in the movie time, it's 2 or 3 days.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But for Tom Hardy's career, it was probably months where he had to be this like dirty, sweaty dude, which I think is interesting. But so you get to the end of this relationship in this movie. And
talk about the end of this movie, even if it's spoilers. But carry on.
But no, I don't want to actually talk much more about this movie because there were no gooey moments.
Yes.
It was a bit, it was just, it was a CGI... And it also just as you said, there's this kind of very elaborate plot device
that makes no sense that the movie
so it was a bit shit.
Okay, but the whole way home I was like, I must look like a crazy person. I could not stop laughing because of the end of this movie. I just found it, and the more I thought about it, the funnier I found it. So spoilers for Venom, for the end of Venom The Last Dance. I'll put time codes in. Venom dies at the end.
Okay.
But then the movie ends with this montage of Eddie Brock, Tom Hardy, walking around New York, reminiscing about all his fun little adventures with Venom. It ends in exactly the same way that the Fast and the Furious movie where Paul Walker died ended. You know where Vin Diesel sits around and he remembers all his memories about Paul Walker.
Oh my god!
So they do exactly that.
Does he have a barbecue with the family?
That would have been great. But he's remembering all of his fond little memories with this horrible goo monster.
Yeah.
Not a real man who died. You know, and it's like, it was the funniest thing I've ever seen in my entire life because it felt like a parody.
Funny, it felt like a parody, an SNL skit or something.
But they're playing it straight. And he even has the little, like, I won't forget you, buddy.
Oh,
and it's like,
God.
Dude, the more I thought about it, the funnier I found
it. So I haven't watched it. I wasn't planning on watching it.
Don't.
I asked you before we came in here, I'm like, is it worse than Venom 2? And he said it's way worse.
I think it's worse than Venom 2. And Venom 2 is bad.
Shocking. Like, do you know what irritates me about the Venom movies is it thinks it's so funny. It's that class clown in school who was not funny.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, gotcha.
Where you're just like, fucking shut the fuck up, Venom. Like, oh, hello.
Yeah,
I want to eat her.
He's got this kind of character to him. Yeah.
And then Tom Hardy in every fucking movie with any American accent, he's always, I'm from Brooklyn. You know, like, it's his go-to accent. Whenever he could be playing fucking Thomas Edison. Yo, well, I'm walking here. I'm inventing here. You know, Jesus Christ.
Juno Temple is in this.
Yes.
They got a couple of cast members from Ted Lasso.
Oh, right.
You could just see that someone knew the casting director of Ted Lasso or someone watched and were like, these guys are good.
Yeah.
So Juno Temple's come over and then the Mexican guy. From Ted Lasso.
I love football. Okay.
He's like very sweet and he's perfectly cast in Ted Lasso.
Yes.
He's just a barman in this movie, but it's a little cameo. Okay. But Juno Temple is British and puts on an amazing American accent.
Okay. Juno Temple
isn't Chiwetel Ejiofor, how do you say it?
Yeah, that guy.
He's also British, isn't he?
Yeah, he is.
I think so,
He's also an American accent.
A bunch of people putting on American accents.
Yes.
All right.
Avoid.
Yeah. Should we move on to TV?
Let's do it.
Sure. Let's do it.
I started Doctor Odyssey,
okay,
which is the big billboards across Joburg TV show. It is Disney Plus's new Something for Everyone TV show.
Okay.
So I had to give it a try to talk to you guys about it. It stars Joshua Jackson, who we all know as Pacey.
And the guy from Fringe.
Fringe.
Yeah, Fringe. He's like the main character in Fringe.
Do you remember Fringe? The 2000s answer to X-Files.
Okay.
It was great. It was like a J.J. Abrams show.
Yeah.
Okay. But Joshua Jackson was Pacey from Dawson's Creek and was in the Mighty Ducks films.
Yes.
So he plays Dr. Max Bankman, who is the new doctor on a big, fancy-ass cruise ship.
Right.
And you think, what?
Okay.
Do they have a hospital and a cruise boat? And you best believe they do, because they are often too far away from land to do anything. And
I know there are morgues on cruise ships.
Yeah. No, exactly. No, they are.
Yeah, they are.
Because a lot of people fucking die, because a lot of retirees go on cruise ships.
Yes.
So yeah, it's really silly, but it's desperately trying to be something for everyone.
Okay.
And it's not shit.
Right.
The pilot was a bit much, where you're like, okay, this is like the fourth emergency in 30 minutes.
Mm.
but I think they were trying to show you the possibilities.
Okay.
Of like strange thing, anomaly. So it's a little bit like House, where they've got to figure out what it could be. Plus, they needed to set up a lot of characters where everyone's quite pretty. And, you know, the romantic triangle between him and one of the nurses who's working with him. And
so it's trying to be like your typical four-quadrant show.
Yeah, it sets up something for everything. Don Johnson is the captain of the ship.
Oh, right.
He's a real sort of silver fox. And in episode two, Shania Twain
rocks
up as like a cougar, and they have a relationship.
Wow.
So no, it's a little bit of romance, it's a little bit of comedy, a little bit of medical drama. So perhaps it's a bit too much.
Right.
But that's up to you guys to decide. It's not crap.
Mm.
It's not dog shit. But it might just be a bit too much.
Sorry, I'm just thinking of all
and
these.
And that is on Disney Plus.
I'm thinking of all these harp stickers we can put on everything. We got certified and gooey.
Certified
it's good. Not shit, but yes. It's not crap. But it's not.
Yeah, there's always somewhere in between.
Yeah.
No, but they definitely, I think it's interesting to see a TV show like this be made.
Mm.
Because obviously it's also a huge budget, because you need a fucking ship.
Yeah.
Right. You need a real Disney ship money, to do this. I mean, there's a lot of big shots of the decks and, you know, so it's like, so they really did a big swing.
Okay.
And I think it's interesting that it also makes sense that there's lots of billboards around that they're giving it a big go. Because
yeah,
I think
I the
smaller,
movies a lot.
The smaller streaming shows, they don't put any money behind
yeah.
the marketing, as we've said. And then they see whether in the algorithms it works, and then they start punting, and then you start seeing the billboards.
Yeah.
But this one clearly was a very big budget.
Okay.
I also think it's interesting that we're seeing on streaming, we're seeing these kind of famous faces from the 90s come back in a more glow-up sense of it. You know,
I'm
with
digging.
Adam Brody is in Nobody Wants This, and everyone's like, I remember him.
Yeah.
So everybody knows, you know, these streamers are smart, where they're recasting the sort of heartthrobs of the noughties.
Yeah.
Because those folk are now their prime audience for streaming, which is the 30, 40-year-olds, because they're the ones that are at home.
Mm. Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's a Joshua Jackson we all know from our childhood.
Yeah.
And he's certainly being portrayed in this show as a handsome guy.
Yeah.
Mm. You know, he's meant to be slick and stylish.
What's
and
his
comes
name?
In.
Max Bankman.
Yeah. Also, like, that's why I wanted to put in his name.
Yeah,
it sounds mention like, it because it's such a silly name.
It sounds like the name where they're like, okay, we need a name for a banker. Max Bankman.
Yeah, I know. So he's a doctor who comes from a history
of... That's the J.K. Rowling
of,
School of Writing.
Yeah, his background is that he did more of the sort of Doctors Without Borders-y type work. You know?
Okay, so he's a hot, handsome doctor.
Who's got a heart because he sort of did the refugee stuff. But he's had a lot of experience. And the whole question is, why is he on this slick, beautiful boat? Why did he give that up? Because I think he wants a change of pace. Yeah. But it's a cool little breakdown of what life is like on those boats. And, you know, this could have very easily been written by someone who perhaps crewed on ships.
Right.
You know, where they're like, this is crazy, man. The fact that people do this, or the fact that there's singles week and then this happens, or what happens
100%.
If the one guy gets an STD and then you got to tell everyone on the boat who he slept with.
Yeah,
and,
that's a fun
the
idea.
The retirees that eat so much shrimp, they get a particular kind of poisoning that he didn't think was possible.
Right.
But it's like, no, that's what happens. They eat that much shrimp. So it's kooky.
Okay, so but you enjoyed it, eh?
Yeah,
it's like fun.
And I
it's
think
fun
it was
and
interesting,
casual
like,
viewing. Yeah.
Yeah, the pilot, as I said, was a bit too packed.
Okay.
Yeah. And then Les, my dear wife, was like,
"Oh yeah, congrats! Yeah. Muzzles.
We got legally married last
you're
week.
You're government married now.
Government married, and the big marriage is coming up this weekend. She was like, let's give it one more. Let's see, you know. And then the second episode was a little better done.
Nice.
Okay.
So it sort of found its feet.
Cool.
Good, man.
We then watched more episodes of Simone Biles Rising.
Oh, yes. Yeah, the new episodes have dropped. Okay. Yeah.
So this, I think, is what Netflix does the best.
Right.
Which are these like
sports dockies. Yeah.
Dockies.
They're great.
Shout out to 20 minutes ago when we were talking about The Last Dance.
Oh my God, so good.
So they have been doing this series on Simone Biles. And for those who don't know who Simone Biles is, she's arguably the greatest
gymnast
of all time.
Yeah.
She is now in her late 20s, having just competed in Paris. Mm. So the first episodes came out before Paris, and then there was this break. And now that Paris has happened, the episodes have dropped that are sort of about Paris.
Yeah, the editors can sleep now.
Yeah, because it was a big deal
for
a few reasons. And the one sort of best way to contextualize it for someone who doesn't sort of know her is that by her competing in Paris, she was one of the only gymnasts, I think since the 40s, and that doesn't count because, you know, we were just, what those gymnasts did in the 30s and 40s is what, you know, little kids do in their sleep now. But she's the first gymnast since then to have competed in three consecutive Olympics.
Okay.
So that just doesn't happen.
Yes.
And she's the oldest gymnast at 27.
Yeah,
to be in the Olympics.
Jeez.
Since
because their bodies get wrecked, dude.
Oh. And the also further context for those who perhaps need it is that her experience in Tokyo was very famously
cut short,
and this whole problem, and she had to bow out in Tokyo, and it was very largely not because of a physical injury, but more an emotional injury.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
like,
yeah,
this term in the world of gymnastics is called, like, the wobbles or the twisties. It's called the twisties.
Yeah.
And I think that's interesting. I think almost all the docu-series, whether it's Robbie Williams, you know, sitting on his couch in the underpants, or his bed in the underpants, or the Beckham stuff, is to review history and review these famous people through the lens of mental health.
Yeah, 100%.
Because it is arguably the most important.
Yeah.
Especially the sprint series. They say it throughout the Netflix series Sprint. Yeah, you got to be fucking fast and you got to have strong muscles, of course. But it is 90% what's in your fucking head.
Yeah.
And if you were mentally good enough to take off at the split second that you should, that your head is right, going into that, it's all that. And what was interesting in this one episode, not to give too much away, is that when they do one particular discipline in the gymnastics, the guy was like, this one is all mental.
Mm. Yeah.
It's not about how high your kick is or how much you can somersault. If you nail this one, it's because your head's fucking right, because you got a balance. It's the balance beam.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it's all about how fucking solid your head is.
Mm.
It's just wild that, like, in this day and age, and thankfully it's getting better, but, like, when you're in the limelight, people get mental breaks. I mean, famously, Britney Spears in the 2000s.
Yeah. Exactly.
And it happens to everyone, right? Corey Feldman's been going through it for a long time because he got treated awfully by Hollywood, and he's going through so much trauma. But anyways, like, and one thing that pisses me off is that people can't see them as human beings.
Yes.
They can't see that, like, when Simone Biles dropped out, I remember everyone was like, oh, she's a coward.
Exactly.
Like, she's pathetic. Oh, like, just do your job. We go to the office and you do. But, like, what the fuck are you doing? You're watching, eating a burger, watching her do this crazy shit on TV.
I love that. It's so great when Olympics roll around, us sitting on our couch going, oh, didn't land that one.
Oh, no, the best one is when they do those perfect dive. You're like, wow, that was incredible. And the judge is like, oh, she really fucked up there. Like, her career's over.
Yeah,
it's
Jesus. No, with the diving, I just look at the splash. I was like, that was a little splash.
Yeah.
That was a tiny splash. I think she fucking nailed that. Yeah. Oh, no, that was a bit too much splash.
Yeah. Well, it's like in the cooking shows, I'll be like, wow, that lamb boot looks perfect. And Gordon Ramsay's like, overcooked, charred to shit.
Yeah.
It's fucking terrible. Or you're like, oh, that's undercooked. Wow. Perfect.
Yeah.
You're like,
no, but I must say, at the end of this Simone Biles series, Leslie turns to me and goes, you really feel her as a human.
Yeah, I love those. And it humanizes them.
Yeah. There's That's this cool. great moment where she's in her new house that she's going to move in, and she's like, this is going to be my office. She's like, I don't know what I'm going to do in it, but it's going to be my office. She's like, I can put a computer there and I can Google stuff. And she, like, giggles to herself.
I love,
And you leave that going, that's awesome. Yeah. Like, fucking well done.
I love.
You deserve it because I'm on your side.
Yes.
100%.
Because mentally I get you.
I love shows that humanize those, like, mythic figures. Because, like, you look at the Beckham show, the best example of that show
is The Moment.
Yeah, The Moment, where Victoria Beckham's talking about how, like, oh, I grew up in a working class family.
And then he chimes in.
And that was unscripted because apparently the director was pissed off because he wasn't supposed to be there. And he was like, no, you were not working class. What car did your dad drive? And she's like, oh, he drove her. She's like, no, what
and
car
goes,
did
no,
he drive?
No, no.
Yeah.
Simple answer.
Yeah.
What car did he drive?
She's like, a Rolls Royce.
He's like, thank you. And he closes the door. Do you know this moment?
No.
It's arguably, like, the moment
greatest
of
moment.
The whole show.
Right.
And it actually sets up everything about the Beckham documentary.
Yeah. But
no, and even in Sprint, like, if you just watched the Olympics and saw Noah Lyles and saw that arrogance and how he presents it to the world, you'd be like, this Oak is an arrogant prick.
Right. Yeah.
So when you watch Sprint, you realize what he's doing.
Yes.
And even some places of vulnerability and where that comes from and how he's purposefully said, I want to put on a show. I want to take sprinting, you know, and that's his opinion, that he's got to sort of give this persona.
Yes.
Yeah.
And he's got it, and he's got the happiness and the exuberance.
Okay.
So part of it is natural, but if you don't quite get the context, you take one look at that and you're like, this looks an arrogant prick.
Yeah. It's like, just, sorry, last thing on this. The one great movie people should seek out to watch something that humanizes people is a documentary just simply called Diego Maradona. Okay. It was by the guy who did, I don't know if you watched the documentary, Senna, the Amy Winehouse ones.
Yeah.
So that filmmaker, his thing is he only uses archival footage, no talking heads, and you'll have people talk over stuff.
Okay.
And the Diego Maradona one is incredible because it was released before he died. But it was incredible because whenever you see Diego Maradona, you think this coked up, insanely talented football player who had problems, connections with the mafia in Italy and stuff. You watch this documentary and it humanizes him. You actually see and hear how he was fucking manipulated by the mafia in Italy and how like he got hooked on cocaine because of them. And like there'd be stories where like he would be called at 3 a.m. by the Camorra in one of the slums in Naples, and they'd be like, hey, come and do a meet and greet. And he'd be like, I don't want to. And they're like, no, you have to.
They had him by the balls.
They had him by the balls the whole time. So like, it's such a great documentary. And I think it's on Showmax or it's on, you can rent it. But Diego Maradona, incredible film.
Okay.
Incredible film.
Nice.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right, guys.
Should I do my list quick?
Oh, fuck, we didn't even get to that.
Okay,
but since we're not, let's do a long one this week because we're not doing an episode next week.
Got you.
Yeah.
So that we can go a bit longer this week. Okay. I think that's fine.
All right, so let's talk about couches, right? So my issue with couches.
All right, so with it being spooky season and with Perrin working today, we love ourselves a good list.
My soiled, crumpled up list. Sorry.
Let's hear it. Okay, so what is this list once again? This is the films, the best films to watch right now that are available for you to watch on our streaming platforms in South Africa.
Yeah, so obviously so many of the old classics that I would have loved to have recommended are not available here. The mainstay classics like The Psychos, The Shinings, those are all available. Yeah. But I want to recommend stuff that you may have missed or stuff that is just like really fucking good that is just not as known to the mainstream. Like
I think that's the point of us. Is that like the big known stuff you would have seen, the algorithms would have recommended them. But
I
think just like any video store, our streaming platforms have a bunch that are just in the corner that you might have missed. All right, so let's
So, I mean, some of these titles our cinephiles here probably know about or have heard about, but for the normies, no, I'm joking, but like for...
Sure.
Yeah, okay, so Creep. Have you guys heard of Creep?
Okay, so is this coming in at number five?
So this is, I'm going to cheat. Creep 1 and 2 is number 5, okay, right? Cool. It's not in order, but this is one of them, right? So Creep was done, so you know who Mark Duplass is, right?
No. I know the one Duplass brother.
Yeah, it's that is Mark Duplass. So there's two Duplass brothers. One is the director and there's...
The one that does more the acting.
Yeah, Patrick Bryce, he directed it with Mark Duplass writing it. Now, Mark Duplass... one of his things that he's known for is mumblecore, right? So that was a movement in the 2000s where it was very naturalistic dialogue, mostly improvised.
A very American...
Very indie...
Indie American scene of filmmaking.
The Safdies are very influenced by it. Very gritty, grimy and stuff like that. So Creep falls in line with the found footage horror wave, right?
Cool. And where is it available?
So both are on Netflix, okay?
Nice.
So the reason why I'm including both is because they're both short films. They're only 80 minutes.
Cool.
It could do a great double feature off the bat, right? But now Creep, what it's about is Mark Duplass invites the guy who actually directed it. He plays Aaron, Patrick Bryce. And Patrick Bryce is a struggling videographer, filmmaker, and he sees an advert that says, $1,000, come to my house and we'll just film us hanging out.
Okay.
That's the job.
Okay.
So he goes out to the woods and he meets Mark Duplass's character. And the whole thing is he sells him is that, I've got cancer. I'm dying. I just want to make a video for my son to see of the things that we won't get to do together. So like a little bath together or like learning to shave and stuff like that, right? So it's like an instructional video to the son that it might not happen. Like these things might not happen with them together, so he wants to do that. But obviously, the things start getting weird, and he starts
he wants to bath with someone.
Yeah, so he starts to show that he's not who he says he is, right? Okay. So Creep 2 is the same kind of premise, the whole found footage thing. And now there's a third Creep thing coming on Shudder. We don't have it here, unfortunately, but it's called The Creep Tapes, which is going to be a mini series of more of these tapes.
Right.
Okay. And that's a cool premise.
It's fucking great. It's funny. It's creepy. It's just Mark Duplass, one of the best horror movie villains ever.
Nice.
So good. And I love Mark Duplass. He's so personable and so lovely. And he does it so well where you're like, I like this guy. He's creepy, yeah. But I like this guy.
Yeah, because he sometimes plays, people will recognize him as being in comedies like a little bit of a creepy dude.
Yeah.
Like the sort of creepy friend that's a bit too horny or too sort of.
But it's so good. Creep is phenomenal, right? Then Ginger Snaps.
Ginger Snaps.
Have you heard of this? Okay, yeah. So Ginger Snaps is a 2000s Canadian horror movie, werewolf movie.
And where is this?
This is on Prime.
Okay.
So Amazon Prime. So Ginger Snaps is one of the best coming-of-age horror movies I've seen. It still holds up. It's got that 2000s teen horror charm to it, you know, like the Final Destinations and the... Not as high-budget as it. Let's say like Urban Legend, that kind of stuff.
There's a whole age of people that can't drive behind like a bunch of logs on the back of a truck.
I'm one of them, yeah. But so Ginger Snaps is a coming-of-age story about two sisters who one of them gets bitten by a werewolf but on the cusp of her becoming a woman through puberty. So she's balancing becoming a woman while also becoming a werewolf.
Right.
And it is outstanding. It's a great movie on sisterhood. It's a great movie on...
When was it made?
I think 2000 or 2001.
Okay, so it's a relatively old movie now.
Yeah, they did two sequels that I've yet to see because I don't want to tarnish the original.
It sounds like a horror version of Turning Red.
Yeah,
it is. It totally is. 100% is.
Without the Asian-ness.
Yeah.
It's so good. It holds up. The creature effects are fantastic. It's a small, low-budget Canadian film, and it's just phenomenal, right?
Okay.
So that's great. Leading from that into this, Raw by Julie Decanal, I think is how you say her surname.
Okay.
So I would have put Titane on the list because Titane is one of my favorite movies of all time now.
Yeah, that's a bizarre premise. I need to watch that
movie. It's fucked, but it's not such
available.
It's not available anything locally, unfortunately. But Raw is available on Apple TV to rent.
Is it the same filmmaker?
Same director.
Okay.
So Raw is a cannibal movie. And it's about a girl who attends a veterinary school. Her sister is in, I think, 2 years above her or something. But she's a vegetarian. She was raised vegetarian. But at this veterinary school, the hazing incident means that they are like covered in like rabbit's blood and stuff like that. And they have to eat like raw rabbit's liver or something, right?
Jesus.
But this wakes something up inside her and she develops a lust for flesh and particularly human flesh, right?
Oh.
And now, great film as well. If we talk about Ginger Snaps, so it's a coming of age story. This is as well where she starts to become who she didn't know she was this whole time. You know what I mean? Like it's a great movie on sisterhood as well, on family trauma that ties into it, and it's one of the best body horror movies you can watch as well. It's very inventive. It's really hard to watch, especially like fingers being bitten and stuff like that.
Apparently, but speaking of vegetarians and cannibalism, apparently you can bite someone's finger off in the exact same ease that you could bite a carrot.
Right.
That makes sense.
The only thing that stops you is your brain going, this is a finger.
Yeah.
This is a finger. This is going to be sore and you shouldn't do this.
Ouchies.
But apparently you can bite it off with your mouth.
Huh.
Just like you would bite a carrot.
Jeez.
Okay, well,
it's possible.
There's Russ's tip to cannibals. to budding cannibals. But yeah.
Don't know how I know that. I just do. All right. Now we're on to two.
Four. Okay.
You're going up in...
No, it's
no list.
It's
no order.
Order,
no particular order.
Okay, so I've got a whole bunch here. So I'm trying to find ones that like.
Got
to
narrow it down, Perrin.
Okay, I'm trying to avoid ones that we spoke about.
You got two left.
Okay, so You Won't Be Alone.
You Won't Be Alone.
So I was very surprised to see that it's available to rent on Apple TV. So it's technically it's an Australian production, but it's in Macedonian. It's set in Macedonia in like the 1800s or something.
Where the fuck's Macedonia?
It's North Macedonia. So Alexander the Great is not Greek. He's Macedonian. It's like in that region. It's landlocked, I think. but it's above like Italy and Albania and all those places.
All right.
Yeah. Ancient, so it's Eastern
ancient
Europe.
Ancient Europe, yeah.
Yeah. So anyways, so...
And it's called?
You Won't Be Alone.
Okay.
So
what's
it's,
it about?
So it's a witch, like horror. It's like a folk horror. I'd say it's a more of a horror drama or drama horror in that order, whatever. Anyways, so the whole movie is in Macedonian. And basically what it's about is a witch infects a baby to become a witch. And to I think a witch, to make someone else a witch, you have to like cut them with their like finger or something, right?
Yes.
So anyways, this child grows up with the abilities of being a witch, which is shape-shifting and stuff like that, right? But now what this movie is think Terrence Malick doing The Witch.
Okay.
Right. So it's very poetic. It's very, it's beautiful, right? And this whole movie is about this woman. It's an obvious on the nose thing, but like learning to be human. So throughout her years as a child going into teenage years and stuff, when she's finally out and about experiencing humans, she literally sheds her skin and becomes a man or becomes a woman or becomes, and we start to see how society treats women in that region and how men are treated, or
it's period. Hey,
it's period. It's, yeah. Incredible. It was one of my, I think it was in my top 10 favorite movies of that year, which was 2022, and it's just beautiful. It's a gorgeous film. You should definitely check it out. So that's
what language do they speak?
Macedonian.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's done by a queer Australian filmmaker. He just did another movie, a Macedonian film. He's Macedonian by heritage.
Right. Okay, but there obviously is a link.
Yeah. So then let's go with the last one. I wanted to say Barbarian, but I feel like enough of our people know about it because it's on Netflix. Mm. Barbarian is so good. But I'm going to go with an Iranian horror film called Under the Shadow.
Jesus.
That's on Netflix as well.
Cool. Okay.
And it's basically, it's a lot of people equate it to being the Iranian Babadook. I think it's better. And it's set during the 1980s in Iran when Iran and Iraq are at war. And most of the film takes place in an apartment building. And the whole premise is that while this war is happening, a djinn, I think that's how you spell it, a djinn, which is in Western culture, we see that as a genie. That's what a djinn is. But often djinns, there's good djinns and there's bad djinns. There's like they're like demons, basically. And this whole premise is that a djinn starts to haunt their apartment, or the mother at least thinks that this is happening, right? And it's almost like a mixture of Repulsion and Babadook and stuff like that. And it is just a phenomenal film. It's also very short. I think it's less than 80 minutes.
Okay.
And it's short, it's concise, it's creepy, it's just incisive. It's so, so good.
And what's it called again?
Under the Shadow. It's on Netflix.
Okay.
Ooh, cool. And it's,
no, this is this is exactly what we wanted, which is like, there's obvious ones.
Yes.
Yeah.
And those get plastered to you. Even Netflix says, here's your Halloween films.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Disney's doing the same. They're like, here's your Halloween films. They're not going to put a weird fucking Iranian movie in that list. So that's where Perrin comes in.
Yeah. I mean, look, I've got a whole list here of other stuff, but we will keep it down to 5.
No, thank you. I think that's
but those exactly are ones that are available right now. Check them out.
Lovely, man.
Nice. As a little addition to some spooky season stuff, we've done our movies, our recommendations. I thought I'd recommend some spooky video games.
All right.
Because that's my preferred horror experience.
I like horror video games more
than I like horror movies.
Wild.
Just for some reason, like the interactiveness of them and like...
It makes sense.
Yeah,
you feel more into it. Yeah, it's more... what's the word when you're in something?
Immersive.
Immersive, that's it. Yeah.
But also like interesting that you can carve out your version of the horror.
Yeah.
Like your decisions can lead to things as opposed to a film being like, you know...
Yes.
Jump now.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
What are your choices?
So, I mean, we got to include a Resident Evil.
Oh, of course.
Like, it's like the all-time horror genre. I think I'd go with Resident Evil 4.
Oh, that's... A lot of people regard that as the best one.
Yes.
And of course, we're talking about the games here. We're not talking about the
movies. We're not talking about like the Mila Jovovich films.
We're talking about the actual games.
Which have almost nothing to do with each other.
Wild.
So, they actually very recently remade Resident Evil 4. They've kind of been remaking all the Resident Evil games.
Yeah, the second one as well.
They did 2 and 3. 2 is also great.
Yeah, 2 is really good.
But 4 is just kind of like... It's such an influential game. There were so many games after it that like picked cues from from it, they, horror or otherwise.
Didn't they change like their whole, because I haven't played the fourth one, but I know they changed the whole how you play it.
So like, the early Resident Evil games were all like fixed camera.
Yes.
They looked almost like security camera type things where the camera would be up in the corner and you'd move your camera, your character around with tank, they're called tank controls. Yeah. This was one where they switched it to third person.
Okay.
So your camera's behind the character and follows them around. Yeah. And it, I mean, it kicked off a ton of games that went like followed the same route. They very recently remade it.
Yeah.
10 out of 10 recommendation. Really? It's an incredible
great
game.
Great remake. Eh? Did you, did you play the VR one?
No. That were, they did Resident Evil 7 in VR, right?
Yeah, it was the, yeah, I think seven the one eight, with I like think. The Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yes, that
family.
Was that was 7, yeah. Also a really good game.
Yeah, so I had the VR set.
Oh, sick. 7 was also like a big change.
It's actually fucking scary.
It's fucking terrifying. Yeah.
Because it's all in like sound design.
Yeah, no, I was shitting my pants the whole time. Like I actually stopped playing because I was like, this is too much.
Like, 7 was also like a big change up because they went from third to first person.
Yeah.
That must be interesting making those decisions.
Yeah. Like how does this best serve like the story we're telling and the mood we want to go for
but
in these
like,
games?
Sorry to detract, but I remember Hideo Kojima was doing it was a Resident Evil game, wasn't it?
He was doing a Silent Hill game.
Yes, that
PT.
Was that. I remember that trailer was fucking crazy. It was a playable trailer, but the whole thing takes place in like two corridors.
It's literally like a circular. You just go around the same corridor in like a loop over and over.
A playable trailer.
Yeah, they called it PT. Which is playable trailer because the game was still in like very early development, but they wanted to announce it.
How did they release a playable trailer?
As a demo, you just download it. You can't actually get it anymore. It's
you
been
download
pulled
it
from,
onto your console.
Yeah. So this was only on PlayStation 4.
Yeah.
You can't get it anymore. It's like it's why if you go to like eBay and that sort of thing, you can buy old PlayStation 4s.
That's crazy.
And have it installed, and they go for like hundreds of dollars.
Because that was highly so. Norman Reedus was going to be in it. He was from Walking Dead. He's Daryl Dixon.
Yeah.
And it was Hideo Kojima, he was doing it, but that was with Konami, and then Konami got rid of him.
Yeah.
And then he left and did his own thing. I think that's why they pulled it entirely.
So the actual game that this was meant to be the trailer for never happened.
Yeah, which is such a shame. Yeah.
Okay, so this is like the only thing people have. It's funny what people kind of collect or find valuable.
Yeah.
But it makes sense that if you have this incredible trailer that resulted in something that never happened.
Yeah,
it's wild. It's terrifying.
It's the only thing you have.
It's one of the scariest things of like
they
experience.
They just brought out a remake of Silent Hill 2 like a few weeks ago. Yeah. It just came out.
Have you played it yet?
No.
Okay.
I buy games when they go on sale.
Oh yeah, 100%. Yeah.
But speaking of games that were influenced by Resident Evil 4, Dead Space.
Dead Space is so good.
It's Dead Space 2 is probably my favorite game of all time. But they just brought out a remake of Dead Space, of the original Dead Space, about 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah.
Like again, incredible game. Very Resident Evil, very Alien inspired. This is a sci-fi horror. This
zombies
time
in space.
Yeah, basically zombies. It's like it also like very kind of 2001-y because there's like an ancient artifact that is like fucking up people's brains and they're creating these mutants.
Oh my god, it's so good.
It's nice seeing the freedom for game makers to release their own movies again.
Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, to release their own games again because in movies that's a very difficult thing to do.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
And almost not done.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think.
Or it's even like slightly more frowned upon. You remake a classic movie, people are like, oh, this is unnecessary.
Yeah.
But people
but
remaking
the time,
their own stuff. That also like just doesn't happen.
Yeah.
But for some reason, like remaking classic video games is a little more like accepted.
It's allowed,
I think because like the difference between the two is so much bigger.
Yeah.
Like the fundamentals of filmmaking haven't changed that much. So if you remake a movie,
exactly,
how different can you actually make it?
I agree.
Video games have changed so much within the last like even 10 years.
Yeah, you're updating the graphics, you're updating the gameplay, the interface. Like I know Konami are remaking, not horror, but they're remaking Snake Eater.
Yes,
third
Metal Gear Solid 3.
Which is my favorite Metal Gear.
Really?
That and the first one. But like, I agree with you. I think remaking video games is a different story. I know sometimes they lose the magic of it.
Yeah.
But like, I never played the Dead Space remake.
It's really freaking
good.
It's very similar. They've like made a few like quality of life changes to like improve things here and there.
Yeah.
But like, it looks incredible. The basic gameplay is still the same. They've kind of changed it because Isaac Clarke is the main character. He never speaks in the original game.
Yes, I remember.
But now they've changed it. So like in 2 and 3, he did speak. So they've changed it in 3, so they've added a bunch of dialogue.
Oh, that's
and that
cool.
Sort of thing,
I like that.
What do you mean by quality of life?
Just little improvements that like make gameplay a little easier to do. Like a lot of like mechanics in games have become like outdated and they're just a little more clunky and harder to interact with. Like for example, Resident Evil 4 in the original one, whenever you aimed your gun, you couldn't move. You couldn't walk at all. It would lock you in place, so you'd have to do that. So now they've changed it so when you walk when you're aiming your gun, you can still walk. Like little changes like that.
Oh, that makes a huge difference. Yeah.
That makes sense.
And then I have to recommend, so if you're looking for Alien Romulus did this thing where it was like a sequel to Alien.
I was waiting for this.
Where it was a sequel to Alien that also tied into Prometheus. Yeah. But if you want something that I think does it better, Alien Isolation is incredible, dude.
Yeah, so this also is the game Alien Isolation.
Yes.
It exists in the world of Alien.
Yes, very much. Yeah. So this is so also acts as a sequel to the original Alien, where you now play as Amanda Ripley, who is Ellen Ripley's daughter, who they've found, or some, there's like a crew that's claiming that they found like the basically the black box, so to speak, of the ship that blew up, because the whole thing is no one knows what happened to the Nostromo and happened to that whole crew until the events of Aliens, which is like 50 years later or something after the original. But now this, there's, they say, we've got this thing, we know what happened to it, so Amanda Ripley now goes to this other space station to like find that, to bring this thing back so they can find out what happened to her mother and the original crew and everything. And of course, aliens get involved.
Yeah.
Or an alien. It's there's it's one alien that's like stalking you on this ship.
That's what I loved about Alien Isolation is that, like you said, it did better than what Romulus did. Yeah. Is that like it really felt it got the assignment. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like that's for
some
me.
Some things are built for movies, some things are built
the
for games.
Yeah. The game is you literally just running and hiding from this alien. And like,
you can't kill it.
Yeah, and you also, the thing is, you never know where it is as well. Like, you can guess where it is.
You can, like hear it occasionally in, like, air ducts and
but,
that
like,
sort of
every
thing,
now and then you'll get swapped up by the alien, and then it's, like, game over. Like, you obviously go back from your checkpoint, but, like, it's so fucking good. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. I knew you were going to, I was waiting for it.
There's also a DLC for it.
Oh, really?
Where you basically play the original movie.
That's
it's
cool.
Got all the original players.
That's very cool.
They even brought back a bunch of like that's the so actors cool. that are still alive.
What is DLC?
Downloadable content. So it's like it's just like
an add-on. Yeah, it adds extra story,
add extra features or extra campaigns and that sort of thing to games that you download.
That's a good pick, man.
I love Alien Isolation.
Yeah, it's
so good.
It's amazing. Like, you guys have a whole different experience to Alien than what I do, where I just watch the movies.
Yeah. You're like, oh.
You're so much more immersed in the world as a result of playing these games.
Yes.
Yeah, I know they made a VR DLC pack on that, and that I haven't played that. That must be
cool.
Fucking terrifying.
Yeah, that would be scary as hell.
Yeah.
All right, boys. That was lovely.
That was lovely.
I'm going to miss you guys next week.
Oh.
But I'm not going to be thinking of you. I'm going to be on an island.
Yeah.
Having the all you can eat or you can drink package.
Yeah, the
Maldives.
All inclusive.
I'll never forget being in a resort in Mauritius once, and it was the same thing. It was that all you can drink or you can eat package, and there were these other South Africans on the other end of the pool that just had the same joke, and they fucking loved it every time. Which was when it was the one Oaks' turn. He goes, "No, Oaks, this one's on me. And everyone loves it. And then 20 minutes later, Eric's like, don't worry, guys. Don't have to pay. I'll pay. This one's on me. Because it's all inclusive.
Yeah.
So I will make that joke at least once to Leslie. But yeah, just a little break. Nice, well-deserved little break.
Yeah.
And yeah. So yeah. Our home base is thevideostore.co.za. And come on back on Tuesdays is our clerks chat, where it's like this. It's just us, and the occasional Thursday will be a guest episode every now and again.
Yeah,
thank you guys.
Cool.
Thanks for the
time. See you soon.
And we'll see you soon.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, bye.
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 Bye.